The story in today's gospel is commonly known as the parable of the prodigal son. It's an unhelpful name. We only ever use the word prodigal in modern English when we talk about this story. Prodigal means extravagant, squandering, or deliberately wasteful. So by calling the story by that name, we immediately focus on one of the characters in the story and on just one aspect of his behaviour. It's not helpful. This is a big story with three main characters, and they each have their own personalities. In fact, some scholars prefer to call this story the parable of the waiting father, because they feel this is a better expression of the story's true focus. So, is it a story about undeserved reward for bad behaviour? Or is it about a devoted child who is ignored and unfairly treated by his father? Or is it about infinite patience and ready forgiveness? Because it is such a big story, we can look at it on many levels. We can try and see what Luke, the author of the Gospel, is saying to us, and he is the only Gospel writer to include this story. Or we can consider what the story itself is saying to us, and perhaps we need to decide what Jesus is saying to us through the story. Sometimes Jesus explained the meaning of his teachings, but Luke records no explanation of this parable by Jesus. The disciples and the other hearers were left to consider all the motives and actions described in the story and to take from it whatever they could. There is a big clue, however, at the beginning of this chapter in Luke about why Jesus told this story in the first place. We hear that tax collectors and sinners were all crowding round Jesus to hear his teaching. Some Pharisees and scribes complained about the fact that Jesus welcomed the sinners and ate with them. And Luke says that this is particularly why Jesus tells three parables, one after the other, which deal with God's mercy and forgiveness. The first two stories are very short. One is about leaving a flock of sheep safely in the desert while the shepherd goes off to look for one that is lost. The second is about sweeping out a house and lighting all the lamps until a single lost coin is found. And each of these has an explanation at the end of it along the lines of, in the same way I tell you, there will be rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents. And then the third is this long and very human story of the father and his two sons. Luke would have known that stories about two brothers were a successful and familiar formula for storytelling. The usual outcome of a story of two brothers was that the younger brother triumphs over the older brother. Luke's readers would probably have recognized and brought to mind the stories of Esau and Jacob in Genesis, where Jacob impersonates Esau at a meal with his father Isaac, who was almost blind. And they would have remembered Joseph and his brothers also in Genesis, where Joseph was hated by his brothers because he was his father's favourite and he had been given the splendid robe of many colours. This story includes a father putting a robe on his son. So by using the formula of the father and two sons, Luke's readers and Jesus' listeners will have settled in for a good dramatic story in which the younger brother should win the day. One of Luke's main themes throughout his gospel is that Jesus sweeps away the old exclusive legalistic approaches of God's relationship with humanity and replaces it with a new inclusive relationship built on love. And part of this new inclusion is the ability to turn away from sin and to be welcomed back into God's love. So a story which describes a parent allowing a child to make mistakes, to learn from them, to ask for forgiveness and to be welcomed back, would have been very close to Luke's view of Jesus' message. And we should also remember that many of Jesus' examples in his teaching were based on the daily things of life in his own time, based on things like sheep and shepherds, madness caused by unclean spirits, people afflicted with leprosy and other diseases, the punishment of those who broke the moral codes. But this story of the father and his sons seems particularly timeless. It isn't bound to the time of Jesus. We don't need to update any of the elements in this story to make it speak to us today. Just look at the personalities involved. We have a restless younger child, believing that he will always live in the shadow of his older brother, his father's natural successor to the family fortune. We have an elder son, brought up from birth to carry on the family business, burdened with the responsibilities of succeeding to the family's interests, trying desperately to be as good as his father, whom he probably worships, yet feeling rather undervalued. We have the worry and anxiety around a child leaving home for the first time, heading for the great unknown. We have the temptations of a big city to a youngster with money in his pocket and a healthy appetite for things he's never been able to try before. We have the challenge of trying to survive on your wits when all your money is gone, and looking longingly at others who have enough to eat and enough security and shelter to get by. We have the realization that it takes courage to turn to those who love you and to find the humility to ask for help, not knowing what to expect. We have the response from some that it was of your own making, you had your chance, I never had what you've had, why should we make any effort for you now? And the response from the loving parent, I'm glad you're back. Whatever you've done, you're still my child. I will always love you and be there for you. Welcome home. You can see those personalities and situations in endless numbers of dramas, soap operas, novels, almost every kind of work of human imagination. The challenging and perhaps frightening thing is, we have probably been at some time in our lives all three of those characters in this story. Haven't we occasionally launched off into something entirely for our own satisfaction, against the wishes of those closest to us, and without too much thought for their feelings? And when we've fallen flat on our faces, haven't we squirmed and struggled with our pride until eventually we've had to go back and say, I'm sorry, please help? Or haven't we sometimes observed a friend or colleague follow a completely foolish and self-centered path, get into difficulties, and then we've pronounced our judgment that she is getting what she deserves, she's made her bed, now let her lie in it? And haven't we at least once said to someone we love, yes, you've been a fool, but I love you too much to leave you at rock bottom. You're welcome to come back. I do think the emotions and the tensions and the personality in the story are very much with us today, They reflect how human beings regularly respond to each other in families, in communities, and in society generally. But if the story, as Luke says, is about God's mercy, perhaps we need to think how, as disciples of Jesus today, we can apply this understanding of human nature to our own relationships. I've never believed that God requires the impossible from us. If we recognize the father in the story as symbolizing God, the parent who forgives unconditionally and who will always welcome us back into a loving relationship, we need to recognize that we will only rarely have the capacity within ourselves to come close to offering unconditional love of that kind to others. We are human. We will often behave like the self-centered children, not the infinitely patient parent in the story. Our challenge is steadily following the teaching of Jesus to lose our inclination towards self-centeredness and to grow in love, forgiveness, and acceptance. Perhaps the lesson learnt by the younger son was that someone who really loves you will do whatever they can to rescue you from destruction. Perhaps the lesson learnt by the elder son was that love can and should set aside human rules of justice, duty, and fairness when we are able to save someone from destruction. The father knows in his deepest being that the love required to give someone freedom costs a great deal, and such love is frequently misinterpreted by those closest to you. Yet love is the only thing that will rescue someone from destruction. The choices offered to us in response to God's love are many and varied. Continuing to worship, to study and enjoy fellowship together in communion with God, as the people God made us to be, is one of those choices. And it brings as much grace and healing. It changes lives and it saves lives. Reaching out through our communities and our personal relationships with love to those who need that grace and healing is another of those choices. And there will be many other choices and challenges for us as we continue to build this church and to build ourselves into a true expression of God's inclusive love. So, how long will it be before we can be left safely in the pasture while the shepherd goes in search of the ones who are missing? Or as we continue here as dutiful children attending to the family business, when shall we overcome our jealousy of the new face, the outsider, the lost soul, or the long-lost sister or brother who is met with great rejoicing? Whenever that is, then perhaps we shall truly be a refuge for the lost, the rejected, and those who are facing destruction. Perhaps then we shall be reaching out to today's equivalents of the tax collectors and the sinners to whom Jesus ministered, the outcasts, the excluded, and those on the margins, among whom this story of mercy, infinite patience, and ready forgiveness was first told. Amen.